Welcome to the Leap Health Workplace Podcast. Here we explore innovative, proven health and wellbeing solutions to drive your performance and productivity. Leap Health empowers individuals and organisations to prioritise their health and wellbeing as a catalyst to performance and productivity. We do this by providing workplace health and wellbeing performance workshops and also the Leap 360 one-to-one leadership coaching to drive health, wellbeing and performance, powered by the Game Changer Index Energy for Impact Profiling Tool. And we offer bespoke corporate programmes to ignite proactivity in ownership at all levels of health and wellbeing as a catalyst to performance and productivity. Whether you're sat at your desk right now or on the move, get ready to listen, get ready to invest your time and take action straight after. I'm Anna Reddy. Let's get ready to make small steps to leap health. Hello and welcome to the podcast today. Today is going to be an amazing one. And at the last minute, I've just managed to get two guests for the price of one. So this is always a massive bonus. So a few months ago, I was introduced to Frank Bruno, who said, you need to speak with James Wright because he runs the Frank Bruno Foundation. And so James and I have spoken, learned a little bit more about what they do at the foundation and how they're really supporting people of all ages with the mental health through some really, really interesting ways and the programme that they've set up. And I think, you know, anyone listening today will be really interested and fascinated by what they do. So James has just got in touch this morning, which has been brilliant, to say that we've got Denny joining us as well, who actually was one of the first people to join the programme. And it was that powerful that then he's taken it upon himself to be a volunteer as well and gain qualifications along the way. So I hope you're really going to enjoy this today. Without further ado, though, I'm going to hand over to James and Dennis to tell me a little bit more about yourselves and really give yourselves justice for that introduction.
Thank you for having us today. We're looking forward to this. My name's James Wright. I coordinate and lead programmes here at the Frank Bruno Foundation in Northampton. My professional background is in fitness, nutrition, boxing, and also I'm a former social worker specialising in mental health services. So it's always been a passion of mine to deliver holistic mental health therapy, which is around exercise, nutrition, mindfulness, well-being, goal setting, very much a cognitive behaviour therapy approach to problem solving and working through issues. And we've kind of stemmed all that together that links in with Frank Bruno's values of mental health and on a holistic level too, write and deliver programs for individuals that access us here at the foundation. And I'm assisted by a few coaches doing that, one of them including me and Denny.
Yes, 100%. Again, like James said, thank you very much for having us. So I very much have the lived experience of mental health, as do all of us. And the foundation really, really impacted my life. And I wanted to kind of give back. So my volunteering role was to help with the coaching. And then I was offered my apprenticeship, which I completed. And then I was offered a full-time role here, which is what I'm doing now.
Brilliant, brilliant. And that's just real testament to the power of the programme that you're sat here today, Denny, with all that experience. So I'm interested how the foundation was actually set up. So I've heard a bit about your background. What actually drove Frank to set the foundation up?
I think Frank's experiences around mental health, obviously very well documented. And I think 20-odd years ago, Frank was probably the first so-called celebrity that, you know, had exposure to his mental health issues. Very, very tragically, the Sun newspaper influencer used the headline when Frank was detained as a mental health at Bonkers Bruno locked up. And Frank fully accepts that, you know, he's has his battles with mental health and lives with mental health daily. But wanted to send a message out there that it's okay to experience mental health, because 20 years ago we used to perceive mental health as the dangerous, the crazy, the insane, and one in five of you will experience mental health, which kind of demonized it a bit, whereas kind of Frank wanted to deliver a message that actually everyone will experience mental health. We have different elements of mental health and it's okay to struggle, and there are different tools that you can use when struggling. And Frank wanted to share his experiences to give back to help those that are struggling.
Really powerful. I think going back to, as you said, you know, 20 years ago, it was completely different, wasn't it? And if we want to move forward, it's all about making those brave changes, like Frank did, you know, raise the awareness around mental health so that things can change. And things have massively improved, haven't they, over the years? But unless we continue to show those little bits of vulnerability, you know, it really hinders the acceleration of recognising the importance of managing our mental health. I listened to a recent podcast that you'd done, and I love the phrase you said, the most important ingredient in mental health is time. Tell us a bit more about your perspective on that, James, and Denny, I'd love to know yours as well.
So I was thinking about this last week in, you know, we talk a lot about mindfulness in today's world. And I was thinking, where has that come from? We now implement it to make a stop, because ultimately our lives in today's world are very chaotic, very rushed. We never have time anymore. So if I look back, you know, when I, 20 years ago, if I got the bus to work, I didn't have one of these things to stare at. So what I would do is I'd stare out the window of the condensation dripping around the bus window, and I'd think things through. That was my mindfulness. If I walked home from work, that time that I'd allocated, that was my mindfulness. Now we're implementing some fantastic techniques to use, and they're really important. But a lot of that is required now because we are literally stuck to screens, stuck to our work. Our lifestyles are so rushed and so busy and stable that we actually don't take time to stop. The human body and mind is not designed to go full out 100 miles an hour nonstop. It's designed to relax. If you look at when individuals are struggling with issues around anxiety, we use distraction techniques to stop and relax the brain, to distract the brain from what it's thinking. And today's rushed world, the way our society is, often contradicts that. So the value of prioritizing time for ourselves, for our well-being, for doing the most simple things that we need to do in our lives, for me, makes it one of the most simple ingredients.
I think not only that as well, we have obviously so many people driving nowadays. Even when I was younger, I'm only 20 years old, but I was walking to school with my mum, and then my mum would walk to work, and those stressors of maybe getting me ready for school, my mum could release those on the way to work walking. And now it's all driving, so maybe she'd be stressing over the traffic and, oh, am I going to make it there? So even just day-to-day life, we haven't got that time as such, or people don't prioritise that time as such as much as they used to.
Really, really see where you're coming from with this, totally. It's all about that, maybe that transition time, isn't it, that it's kind of been eliminated out of our lifestyle. So, to anyone who's just listened, didn't see the screen when Jim said, this is what we've got, is held up a mobile phone, and this is what is stopping us having that mindfulness during those transitions. And yeah, Denny talking about you walking to school, it was only a few weeks ago, and I saw a lad out doing his paper round, and thought, yeah, when I was a kid, we all did paper rounds, and that was kind of our transition, get ready for going to school, a bit of fresh air and a bit of movement. Whereas our digital world has taken it off us, and our minds are consumed so much. And they only did a workshop yesterday with lots of really high up professionals who think they're too busy to take that time to rest their mind, but may not think that in 10, 20 years' time, or even less than that, maybe. So, yeah, I think.
Usually what happens is burnout or a health issue or stress comes along, and that forces the issue to stop and then makes us realise that the life we've been living is very unbalanced and very unhealthy.
Definitely. So I guess it's really important to be recognising early on and treating early on. And another word that you'd mentioned before, James, as well, is that we don't have to wait until we're mentally ill to manage our mental health. So if from both of your perspectives, what would be your top tips on that early intervention?
I think for me, it's firstly acknowledging that we all experience mental health daily. We have positive mental health, we have negative mental health, and then you have mental ill health. Unfortunately, I stitched Denny up in a lot of our workshops, and we'll talk about positive and negative mental health because Denny supports Everton Football Club. So law of averages. The advantages his team might have lost the weekend. I support Liverpool. They've been doing all right recently. So, but that seems quite a comical element to look at it. But actually, the significance of how someone's football team does can have an impact on the rest of their day, can't it? but we have positive mental health and we need to invest into that, raising our endorphins, which we don't do enough naturally in today's world. We get rushes from our devices rather than getting it through exercise or walking or socialization or focusing on our goals and our hobbies and our interests. That's all positive for our mental health. That has to be balanced with negative mental health. A negative mental health can be stress at work, a fallout with friends. They can all affect our mood, our anxiety levels. These things happen daily in everyone's life, and your mental health can fluctuate throughout the course of a day. Some people, unfortunately, experience mental ill health and need some more professional intervention. But even that doesn't have to be for the rest of their life. It could be a chapter of their life. And I think what we have to do is try and teach people the skills to manage the balance between positive mental health and negative mental health. And then that is less likely then to occur mental ill health.
I think the education on understanding that the human emotions will be up and down. So especially for the young people, that they'll be watching these YouTubers or streamers and they're constantly upbeat, constantly happy. And these young people are going, well, they must feel like this all the time. That's just unrealistic, completely unrealistic. So it's about the education of saying, like, you can't chase happiness 24/7 because that's never going to happen. That's not a normal human emotion. You can't be happy 24/7. You will have ups and downs. So teaching these young people that, you know, maybe being anxious to go to school because you're a little bit late, that's a normal human reaction. You don't have anxiety disorder because of that. It's just a normal human reaction, and educating them on, well, you know, how to normalize it and maybe understand that you are normal for being a little bit anxious or, you know, things like that.
Yeah. So if anyone, you know, whoever's listening now, this is a real key take home message. You know, we are never, you know, on cloud nine all the time. Life is a roller coaster, isn't it? But it's how we manage that roller coaster of life and recognizing how we're feeling mentally, and putting interventions in place to help us and overcome those really difficult times. So, Danny, this is a question for you. So you mentioned, you know, how we see so much on social media about what other people are doing. Do you feel this has a bigger impact on younger people? And that's no disrespect to you, James, saying that you're older than Danny.
You but... don't. You feel I'm too old.
Don't mean 20.
I think that young people are more impressionable. And obviously they have less life experience, so I think they're more influenced. So I think they do suffer with it more, and obviously YouTube is more of a younger audience than maybe watching the news as an adult. It's definitely a younger audience for YouTube and things like that. So yeah, I'm not going to sit here and blame all of the YouTubers for doing what they're doing, because, you know, that's their job. They want to make people happy. But do I think that too much time watching these people and spending less time on yourself can affect young people? 100%, no doubt about it. Because I suffered with that when I was struggling with my mental health. I'd just sit at home and I'd watch other people's lives instead of myself. And I wouldn't concentrate on myself. It would always be, oh, what's this person up to? Or what's this streamer or YouTuber doing? And it was always that. So, yeah, I think the young and the impressionable really are affected by social media quite a lot.
Yeah, and that's definitely something we need to watch out in the future as well, as to how that manifests. Now, I put a recent post on social media of my kids sat on the top of this beautiful hill looking out Pendle Hill, which is really close to us. It looked like, you know, I've got the idyllic life with three kids that loved each other, arms around each other. You know, seconds before that, they were belting each other. I was fearing one were going to push them off the top of the hill, and we'd had tantrums all the way up to the top of the hill. And just to like make the point that it's so easy to paint a pretty picture when actually it's not always that way. So to learn a bit more now about what you do at the foundation, what's involved with the programs, and what can people expect when they come along to the foundation?
We have different services. Our main service that's known is our Round by Round program. That's run on a Monday and a Tuesday for different groups of people. That's an 8-week program. People get here generally kind of 9:30-ish in the morning for some breakfast, a cuppa. And then we do non-contact boxing and exercise in the morning. Non-contact being guys don't spar, don't end up fighting each other. It's using boxing skills and exercise skills to get stress out, heart rates up, learn a new skill. Exercise is a great way to simmer anxiety. myself here, and we have a psychiatric nurse based in the team as well on those days, that if anybody's had a tough weekend or got some challenges, they can then have some set time with that staff member to talk through what's going on. We provide lunch here. And then in the afternoons, we do different workshops, with the aim being at the end of the 8 weeks, individuals have got more tools to help support them with their mental health in life. And those workshops stem around understanding mental health, how to manage anxiety, nutrition, mindfulness, goal setting. And one of my favourite ones is actually, we're all aware of physical first aid kits, but none of us have our own individual mental health first aid kit. So what we help individuals do is create their own unique mental health first aid kit that identifies their stresses, their triggers, and how they can learn from that to then set new coping mechanisms all the way through to then deliver for their own well-being moving forwards. At the end of the 8 weeks, we don't shut the door on individuals. They're more than welcome to come on Friday mornings for our drop-in services. So we might not see somebody for 3 months, but they might come in on a Friday morning to use the gym, see a member of staff, check in with friends here as well. We provide young people's programs on a Wednesday for young people that can't access education for many different reasons, such as mental health, behavioural problems. So we give them a provision here. On Thursdays, we do kind of one-to-one work. So it might be somebody from a local hospital comes in to do some one-to-one work with coaches or young people, or we do mental health in the workplace here for businesses and organisations. And on Fridays, we go back to our young people's programmes, which Denny and our other coach, Joe, with a nurse based on our team, again, Dale, they run young people's sessions in the afternoons and early evenings around non-contact boxing, exercise and workshops again. So that's a little gist of, I guess, our working week. And then we also have an amateur boxing club. We have a kickboxing club that hires it. We have professional adults who come in the evenings to do exercise and training classes. And Denny leads his own classes with our coaches in the evenings and weekends as well.
Wonderful, wonderful. And just going back, you said that people go away with a unique mental health first aid kit. Mm. That sounds amazing. And that kind of goes back to the point we were discussing, Denny, doesn't it? Around how you don't then compare yourself to others, because everyone is so unique and your own personal first aid kit, I guess, is going to be quite different to somebody else's, but it really creates that uniqueness and enables individuals to understand themselves better. And absolutely loving the whole holistic approach, because we can never treat anything in isolation, can we? Mm. Just empowering people with all the tools that they possibly can. I'm intrigued to learn a little bit more about young people, and you know how you've really made a difference. Obviously, Denny's living experience, but how you really make a difference in their kind of lives. There was an experience a situation I'd heard about recently, where at a school where they're all about inclusive punishment. So if one child did something wrong, the whole class suffered. So two lads were misbehaving a little bit, being a bit boisterous. So as a consequence, they kept them all in during break time. My thoughts, don't we? Your thoughts are, surely them lads just needed to let off a bit of steam and they needed to do a bit of movement and exercise. And I guess that's what you're offering young people, isn't it? An alternative way to education. How do you think education and the traditional system could be enhanced based upon your knowledge and experience from your youth programme?
I think I'll answer from my old head, and then Denny can answer from someone who's very engaged in running the sessions, I guess. So I think for many of our services and systems are out of date. You know, firstly, I do feel for schools, because you know, my expectation of school is to provide education, and if my child was struggling, to find ways to support that child. But I think schools are really up against it, with the expectation put upon them now to be social workers, nurses, probation officers, referees and everything else. And post-COVID, there is clearly a rise in young people with mental health needs and behavioural problems. Generally, for me, when a child is presenting in a certain way, sometimes they're trying to tell you something that they don't know what they're trying to tell you. And defiance and challenging behaviours and emotional behaviour can be an example of that, can't it? Sometimes children can just be children. And we have to also understand that as well, I think. Children, I believe we have a crisis with our nutrition and physical health for young people in the UK. You know, type 2 diabetes is only getting higher and higher and higher. And I think one of the concerning elements for me that I'm seeing recently is the rise in the online gaming, where, you know, I grew up on video games. I love video games, but I wasn't gaming for 16 hours until the early hours of the morning. And the way games have changed now concern me that, you know, we see young men at the age of 13 who have an identity on a game as being a 7-foot strapping Viking. And they're almost getting everything they need from their life through this video game now, with a network and a community and identity. So then when actually they're in the real world, they actually don't feel as confident or as secure and struggle to engage with people because they're not in this fantasy world that they prefer to live in. And I think elements like this and then the unbalance of that is becoming a significant problem for us. Denny runs our programs on a Friday night, so probably sees more than I do.
Yeah, I think with the school's situation, I agree with James. I think they're in a really, really tough position right now, especially when you've got 25 plus students in that classroom, in each class. I think the difference between somewhere like here and a school is we have a lot more individual time with the young people. We have the time and the availability to be able to go around and actually build connections with these young people and act as if we care, because we do. And unfortunately, schools don't have that time and they don't have the option to go and work on individual students as much as they would like to. So I think that with schools, could they be better at what they do? Yes. But do I think they're in a really hard place at the moment? Yeah, 100%. So it's just about, I think, the fact that we give these young people more connection and more time.
Yeah, and that's a really, really fair representation, isn't it, of schools. And yeah, I myself put my hands up, I couldn't be a teacher. So they have got their work cut out, definitely. But yeah, the two components that you really hit the nail on the head with was that connection and time, which is such a powerful thing. And often in our busy world, one which we really can't utilise on any of the guidance, which is right at the beginning, isn't it? Right at the beginning of any disease and prevention, you know, management guidance, is always those lifestyle interventions and really understanding somebody. And that's where we struggle with time.
Yeah, if you look at schools from 100 years ago and schools today, they're still very similar. But if you look at something like a car from 100 years ago compared to today, they're completely different. And so that development of a school hasn't really been prioritised, if you like. So, yeah, I think it's really important. I think it's something that us as a country, we need to really push.
Yeah. And that's all about empowering young people, isn't it, to have that confidence to make a change as well. As adults, we try and drive that change more, but it's, you know, the work that you're doing is incredible because you're empowering young people to have that confidence to make a change.
I think also with young people, it's the education around mental health. And I think young people are very confused now in that we need to be teaching young people how to regulate and understand their emotions more. So, you know, every day myself and Denny will have a young person say, I feel anxious, so I must be mentally ill. Or they've diagnosed themselves with PTSD because they watched a TikTok video about it. And we've got to kind of differentiate young people. Now, you're not either not mentally or mentally ill. Actually, you can have emotions. You're developing from a child into an adult. Your body's changing. Your mind is changing. You're developing your own persona. These will affect your emotions, and actually that's part of your development and your growth, and you need support with that rather than that feeling of I must be mentally ill.
Yeah. And often it's that information bias, isn't it, where if you're searching for something, maybe they've seen a TikTok about anxiety, something, you then search for more of that information to confirm your beliefs, which then make it harder to challenge them. And then you most recently put a post on LinkedIn, which I just thought was such a powerful photo. Of a chap, describe it, anyone that's listening, but a chap whose face is smiling and inside his head is a little child curled up, crumbling. And I just think this must be so many people at so many times. What do you think we can really do to break that mismatch between those things? And what are the types of things we can say to people to really understand them more and be able to help them, because 9 times out of 10 you ask someone if they're okay, they're going to just say yes.
Of course.
What can we do to dig a little bit deeper?
I think to start off with, obviously there's going to be so many different answers and so many different ways to help, but feeding that inner child, it's a really important thing. So I did a little bit of digging and thinking to myself, because I've got a younger sister and she's amazing at drawing, but recently she's gone into upper school and slowly, progressively stopped drawing. And to me, that was that I looked at it and I thought, that's really sad because she has a lot of potential. And I think if you look at the again, I'm not trying to just blame schools, but if you look at the school system, you go from nursery to primary school, and in those two there, you're doing a lot of creative things, you're building things with Lego, you might be drawing, things like that, and then suddenly you're pushed into an upper school where they want you to write paragraphs and things like that, and now they're trying to kill off that creative side. And I think it's really about, you know, bringing out that inner child and not taking life too seriously, if that makes sense. So you know, do things that might bring you back to when you were younger, and you know, you might enjoy it, might make you look a little bit silly, but do it anyway.
Yeah, another great take-home message there. You know, just do the things that you enjoy and make you feel young as well. And often, yeah, when you get to an adult, you kind of disconnect from getting involved with the kids with things like that, when actually, if you get on their level and really get present with what they're doing, you can get so much out of it as well. And so, yeah. Thank you, Danny.
I think it was from an adult perspective as well. I shared this in a workshop yesterday. We need to learn how to communicate as humans again. 100%. You know, I'll pick up again for the viewers, was a picture on my phone. You know, how can I communicate now? I can send a WhatsApp message and I'm going to wait until I see two blue ticks, until the person's read the message, and then wait for them to reply. Well, I know they've read the message. Well, I haven't replied. I can then get a message on LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook. So I haven't got Snapchat, TikTok, all of them, right? Then got emails. You've got multiple email accounts. But actually, that's not healthy communication. Communication is by actually talking to somebody and having the listening skills. And I think we need to encourage individuals to learn the listening skills more, because ultimately when we want to talk, we want two things. We want to be listened and we don't want to be judged. And, you know, we were talking yesterday that obviously there's a huge drain in our services. I think, you know, where we are, it could be up to 18 months to get any form of talking therapy now. And I think you only get 5 or 6 sessions then through the NHS. But actually, if there's a society and as friends and families and loved ones, we all invested a bit of time to prioritize time to listen and spend time with others and communicate and talk in a non-judgmental listening way, people would have less a chance of wanting to crisis, and then the need for services would be less as well.
Definitely. And we all know, don't we, if we've got a problem, once you've spoken about it, it just helps you to create that clarity in your mind, and you do immediately feel a little bit better from speaking about it. We asked a question quite recently in a workshop: when was the last time you felt fully heard and fully understood? And it was quite powerful, because nobody could actually remember when they felt that they'd really truly felt heard and really felt understood. And as humans, we need that. We need that to build up that connection. And in terms of our well-being, connection and belonging is one of the most important factors. I think that's really powerful to really focus on that active listening and actually taking in what other people are saying.
With like listening and communication as well, you mentioned active listening, and I think especially after COVID as well, COVID did not help. But with our young people, I was doing some stretches at the end of the session a couple of months back, and we had this young person, and she was watching TikTok while doing these stretches, and it made me go, these young people's attention span is getting shorter and shorter, because it's going to, you know, when I was younger, I used to watch maybe 20, 25 minute video, and then it goes to 10, and then it goes to 5 minutes, and then it goes to 30 seconds, and then 10 seconds, and now every 10 seconds they're stimulating the brain with a new stimulus, and it's these young people are really struggling to have a conversation because it's boring them.
It is, and it's getting that dopamine hit, isn't it? It's addictive, and they need it more and more.
Definitely.
So in terms of this, your program that you do, I'm just going to touch on this. I don't think we've really explored it as much as I wanted to, in terms of like the non-contact sports. When you Google it, there's absolutely loads and loads of benefits of non-contact sports. I don't think people probably always realize all the benefits that they are. What do you see as some of the key benefits from including that non-contact boxing?
I think first and foremost, again, we're living in a world now where stuff is delivered to our house. We drive everywhere. So, you know, I always joke the hardest sport I've ever done in my life was with my mum walking to the supermarket and having to carry the bags home of shopping a mile with two bags in each arm. You know, my mum was like world's strongest woman carrying it back. We were out, we walked to school, we walked to the supermarket. I'd walk a mile just to knock on my mate's door to see if he was in. And actually, as humans, we are designed to be active. And, you know, I assessed somebody yesterday that works from home and they take less than 500 steps between the hours of 9 and 5 in the day. That's only going to create more anxiety. It's only going to create more overthinking. It's only going to create more stress. We're not releasing the stress in a natural way of raising our endorphins. Also, as humans, we're quite tribal. So, you know, when people come into the gym, how's your day been? How are you doing? Did you watch the football match last night? Do you watch EastEnders? People respond well to that. It distracts the brain from stresses that are coming through the door. People are learning a new skill. A boxing gym is quite a unique environment in life, in that you can have somebody's come out of prison hitting a punch bag next to a police officer who stood next to a businessman who stood next to someone who's been homeless. And all the egos, all the issues, all the agendas are just left the door, and people are in one room for one collective goal together. And that's quite a powerful tool.
That is. That's amazing to... There's not many places, is there, where everyone can leave their egos behind and just all be on a level playing field, really. What about your thoughts, Danny? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think it's... I look at it from a point of view of seeing people come in the morning, shoulders up, looking down, really timid, anxious, to comparing it to when they leave. And that to me is one of the most powerful things that I see from day to day during my job. Like, we'll have people coming in and they'll respond with a yes or no, and that's it, because of how anxious they are. They get in the gym, we'll do a workshop, they'll eat something nutritious, and it's like they're a whole different person. And it's a real rewarding factor for us, but also for them, because it's now seen as an achievable goal, if that makes sense, because they haven't seen this them, if you like, they haven't seen this type of person for a very long time. So yeah, when they come in all anxious and then they leave with a beaming smile on their face, it's that feel good factor of, you know what, I've done something good today. I've done something practical. I'm helping myself. And then they see the light at the end of the tunnel. They see the goals and they see, you know what, I can do this. And it's about lighting that fire back in them.
Yeah, lighting that fire back in them. And actually, to think that the waiting list now could take 18 months or longer to light that fire back in them again, feels like we're really not doing the world justice, does it? But probably shows the efficacy and powerfulness of what you're actually doing at the programme. So if there's someone sat here right now thinking, I am really, really struggling, it sounds like the work that you're doing is wonderful, but they just don't really know where to go, because often the case is that once you get, you know, you get really worried and you get yourself in a bad place, it's hard to actually even think what should be my next step. What would you advise somebody who's really, really struggling now?
The first part is the hardest, and that's to ask for help. And we're not very good at that as humans, because we're scared of judgment. But, you know, go to a loved one, a friend, someone that you feel safe with, and say you're struggling. I need some time. I need a cuppa. I need a coffee. I need someone just to help me gain some refocus. If that struggle is more prominent, then you do need some professional help and accessing the GP straight away. And the GP can look at different options that are available to you. The problem is different counties in Northamptonshire have many, many different waiting lists and services available here. So, you know, Northamptonshire, whilst we have a statutory waiting list for services that's quite high, we have some amazing voluntary sector services that now GPs have social prescribers in that can help people access. And we have some amazing charities that we work closely with that people can help for very, very different needs. But I think the first bit is always reaching out and just to someone you trust and asking for that bit of help and time for me.
Definitely.
And so often that person's waiting there to help you. They just don't always know how to approach it with you. So maybe they're just waiting for you to approach them. Sorry, Denny, I interrupted you then. I wasn't actually listening, was I?
I think, like James said, it's important to speak to the right person, making sure that they don't turn what you're saying around and talk about themselves, make sure that they're listening. Like we said, active listening. It's a really important thing. But I think what I would say is don't focus on the long-term goal of I want to fix myself. And that's a really common like goal. And to me, I don't like the words I'm going to fix myself. So, you know, I think creating those short-term goals, those medium-term goals, and then go into the long-term goals. Because as soon as you focus on that long-term goal, you are setting yourself up to fail completely.
Yeah, and it just feels more manageable with those short-term goals. So, again, I'm just trying to make this really actionable and simple for anyone who's listening. What might be some examples of those short-term goals that you might?
To put it in, so
really down, what might those small little steps be?
So I would say, I'll use my situation as an example. So I really struggled for about 6 months where I would not leave my house or my room. And so when I did eventually, I just went, oh, you know what? I'm going to do it. So I left my house and my body's first reaction was to go, whoa, what is this? I haven't experienced this in a very long time. So I started getting like pinpricks all over my body. So imagine like loads and loads of little pins all over my body. And that was my body's reaction to going, I have no idea what this is. I'm scared. Go back home. So my long-term goal was to be able to go for a walk without that reaction, or maybe go to the gym without that reaction, or just have a social experience without having that anxious reaction. Now, I couldn't just leave the house and go for a walk with that. That was completely undoable for me because my body would just react in that way. So I went, you know what? I'm going to go out for 30 seconds. I'm just going to stand out in the back garden for 30 seconds, right? Might go out with my mum, have a chat. It might start. Okay, so I'm going to go back inside. I might get in bed so something's touching it, so it's itching it a little bit. Bearing in mind, it was a painful feeling. So it wasn't easy. It wasn't like it was itching. Like, I think it's really important for people to understand that a lot of it isn't easy. It's really important that you push through it. So I would stand out in the back garden for 30 seconds, then go into bed, obviously, so something's touching it, a little bit soothing. And then I'd go, you know what, I'm going to go out for a little walk around the block quickly. Maybe that might take a minute, right? So I'd do that and then I might start running because it starts to hurt. So I'd go home. But I was slowly exposing myself to normality, if you like, to these social situations, so my body knew that I'm not in danger. I'm not going through anything dangerous. And then eventually, I'd be able to walk around the block without running, and I wouldn't have these painful feelings all over my body. And then I'd be able to go to my cousin's birthday party, or you know, a social experience. And then. Now I'm meeting new people every week and I'm all right doing it. I still get it, especially when meeting new clients. I do still get it, but I've learned how to manage it. And that's something that the foundation really, really helped me with.
Oh, thank you for sharing that. Thank you. That's just, it's incredible. It's incredible how much progress you've made, and incredible to see that. Oh, they're just small steps. And I think that is just so useful for people to hear about how you can just, you know, go from a place of not being out for 6 months and then just make such small steps. And if someone had have told you, you know, 3 years ago, whenever it was, you're gonna be telling other people what to do.
Yeah,
3 years down the line, that might have felt a bit overwhelming for you, I guess, and a bit you might have been like, no way. And look at the progress you've made now. It's just inspiring and motivation. So anyone who's listening now, you know, capture that story and apply it to your own life, because that is just, you know, gold dust is that. It is absolute gold dust. And
it's important to link it back to what James was saying about time. It's not a quick fix. It took a long time. So it took a long time for me to be able to take these and lead these boxing sessions. Like, I don't know, 2 years ago, I would never have done that. That's something that wouldn't have been in my wildest dreams. And now, you know, I'm leading these sessions. So it's really important to not rush it, take your time with it, relax, and don't put that time limit on it. You know, just go with the flow, if that makes sense.
I think you're really looking at yourself as an individual. So really knowing you as a unique person as to what are the steps that are going to really change your life. So well done. Incredible. So I think we're like coming towards a bit of an end here, and what a great way to be closing this podcast with such an amazing story of success. But if people want to find out more about the work that you do, if they can access, you know, the amazing work that you're doing, how can they get in touch and how can they get involved?
Social media, there is the Frank Bruner Foundation. More specific than what goes on here in our central location is the Frank Bruner Foundation Northampton. We're on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn.
We on anything else?
You do have six places.
No. Just those three.
The Frank Bruner Foundation.co.uk website is also there as well for people to see. Frank himself does share our stuff on his social media following as well.
Wonderful. And just once again, I just want to thank you both for your valuable knowledge and wisdom and stories that you've shared as well. I do feel like it's really, really interesting and really useful for anybody listening now. And even if it's not you listening right now that's struggling, I'm sure you know somebody, and I'm sure you know somebody that these words of wisdom could really, really help and make a big impact on their life. So open up those conversations, share what you've learned during this time. As we started the podcast by saying, it was a different time when Frank opened up about his mental health. You know, let's try and make as much progress over the next 20 years by using what we know now and making it contagious with other people, that we talk about it, that we help others as well. And let's listen to what they have to say. Thank you so much. Do either of you two have anything else to share before we close?
Over to you.
I think we've covered a lot of it. I think, like I said, just take your time with it. You know, don't stress about it. It does take time.
One of my favourite quotes is that quite often people tell me about a bad day, and I always come back and say, "Did you have a bad day? Or did you endure a bad 20 minutes that then took over your day?" And if you can learn the tools and the skills that allow you to remove yourself from the emotional response of the 20 minutes, that 20 minutes won't take over your day.
Brilliant. Did you really have a bad day? Question it. So before you stop listening, I want you to pause. What did you take away from the podcast today? What small steps will you start? And what did you hear that you know could help someone else to make small steps to lead their health, well-being, productivity and performance? Please do share this episode and please subscribe to the podcast. And remember that Leap Health are here to provide workplace health, well-being and performance workshops, one-to-one coaching and bespoke corporate solutions to help the world make small steps to leap health, well-being, productivity and performance. Please do get in touch. It's anna@leaphealth.co.uk. Have a great day.